Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Washington's Marines, The Origins of the Corps and the American Revolution, 1775 to 1777, by Major General Jason Q. Bohm, USMC, narrated by Eric Jason Martin. Prologue. Patches of frost and snow cover the New Jersey landscape on the cold and peaceful morning of January 3, 1777. The silence is broken by the crunching of hundreds of feet traversing the frozen ground. Small clouds, created by the heavy breathing of Continental soldiers and Marines, rose from a long column snaking its way down a sunken road along the Stony Brook. All is going according to plan, but the element of surprise is lost as American scouts unexpectedly encounter a British unit on the hills outside of Princeton. At first, both sides are uncertain as to the other's loyalties. Any doubts quickly vanish as the Americans' front ranks observe supply wagons turn and race back toward Princeton. Soldiers, in their distinct red coats, with the morning sun glinting off their muskets, rush to gain positions on the nearby high ground. The troops belong to the British 4th Brigade, commanded by Lieutenant Colonel Charles Mawhood, and consist of the 17th, 40th, and 55th Regiments, supported by three troops of dragoons. Mawhood had been guarding Princeton, but was ordered to reinforce Lord Charles Cornwallis, who had been soundly defeated by General George Washington the previous day in the Battle of Assunpink Creek outside Trenton. Cornwallis believes the rebel army remains positioned just across the creek from his force. Once Mawhood's reinforcements arrive, he intends to traverse the creek and finally crush Washington's troops, ending the rebellion. Using deception and guise, however, Washington's force had vanished undetected, traveling 11 miles farther north throughout the night to capture the isolated British position at Princeton at dawn. After marching all night, Washington and his troops were exhausted, but their spirits remained high. Following a chain of defeats that began in August 1776, the Continental Army had been forced to surrender New York and New Jersey. It was sitting on the verge of extinction due to casualties, sickness, desertions, and enlistments scheduled to end within weeks. These were desperate times. Washington's army of nearly 20,000 had been reduced to around 2,500, while the British and their Hessian allies remained poised to cross the Delaware River and capture Philadelphia. Responding to Washington's pleas for assistance, Congress called for the New Jersey and Pennsylvania militias and directed the raising of a battalion of Marines. The latter would be detached from the Navy to support the Army in its time of need. Major Samuel Nicholas had successfully led the Marines' first amphibious assault, capturing British weapons and ammunition in New Providence, Bahamas, earlier in the year, which helped supply the Army. Now, they were rushing to Washington's aid. Nicholas combined Marine detachments assigned to three Continental frigates under construction in Philadelphia to create a 120-man battalion. Washington assigned the battalion to a brigade of Philadelphia militia referred to as the Associators. The Associators and Marines had provided support at the Battle of Trenton 10 days ago, then reinforced the Continental line to defeat Cornwallis the previous day at Assunpink Creek. They were now following Brigadier General Hugh Mercer's brigade as part of General Nathaniel Greene's division of Washington's army. Concealed in the low ground of a sunken road, the Marines became aware of a sudden battle to their front, hearing artillery and musket fire break the morning silence. They can tell by the sound of the guns that battle lines are shifting as they receive orders to move forward quickly. Explosions erupt around them, and enemy fire whizzes past as they crest the high ground and enter a chaotic scene. Brigadier General John Cadwallader, commanding the Philadelphia Associators, sees Mercer's brigade beginning to break. He rushes his men forward with the Marines in trace, forming his troops from the right by divisions. Nicholas maneuvers his marines to the Associator's right as the mass of troops begins to advance toward the enemy. It does not go well. With General Mercer down as a casualty, his brigade begins to retreat. The men turn and run head-on into the Associators and Marines, who are attempting to form and advance while under enemy fire. The momentum of the withdrawing soldiers proves too much, and the American line begins to disintegrate. Victory is within Mawhood's grasp, but then George Washington arrives. Washington's presence and bravery galvanized the soldiers and Marines. The general rallies his men, shouting for them to follow as he charges toward the enemy. Washington's leadership has the desired effect. It inspires the soldiers and Marines to reform and assault the oncoming British, resulting in a rout. The Americans chase the fleeing British for miles, securing their third victory in 10 days. In 1975, during the bicentennial of the beginning of the American Revolution, Charles R. Smith published the definitive Marines in the Revolution. This well-researched text is a comprehensive history of the creation and contribution of Continental Marines, the predecessors of the United States Marines, in America's first war as a new nation. In it, Smith admitted that primary sources concerning the establishment of the U.S. Navy and particularly the Marine Corps are scattered and few. Technological advances in today's interconnected world, however, provide greater access to information than that experienced by Smith and earlier historians. Taking advantage of this access, I have built upon Smith's research, providing another view of the United States Marines' humble beginning and their small, albeit important, contribution to creating and preserving a great nation. America is a maritime nation. In the 18th century, colonists used its vast eastern coastline and abundant lakes and rivers as highways for commerce and lines of communication during military operations. England, France, and Spain validated the need for men who fought on land and sea as they did battle on the waterways to gain control of the North American continent. Each nation employed Marines to obtain their national objectives, with American colonists fighting on the side of the British. The Seven Years' War, 1756 to 1763, placed Britain in firm control of America's 13 colonies, but it came at a high cost. As a result, the British wanted the colonists to cover the expenses of the war and their enduring defense. The colonists rejected paying increased taxes without proper representation in the government. This conflict led to the American Revolution. The colonists found themselves at war with a global military power. 13 independent colonies needed to unify to break from the mother country. Representatives from each colony formed the Continental Congress in Philadelphia, laying the groundwork to declare independence and establish the United States of America. First, the Americans needed to defeat their British oppressors. Experience had demonstrated the need for a balanced military force that possessed the ability to fight and win on both water and land. Congress first prioritized the creation of an army to address the hostilities around Boston. George Washington was appointed as commander-in-chief of a force that existed in name only when the war commenced. Washington assumed command of the New England militia units holding the British under siege in Boston following the battles of Lexington and Concord. Slowly, they were molded into a cohesive war-fighting organization, but Washington knew more was needed. He pressed Congress to create a permanent national army, but many were opposed to the idea, fearing a standing army could overthrow the government in the future. Instead, Congress opted for state militias that would mobilize only in a time of need. Debates on the future of the American military continued as hostilities grew between the colonies and England. Washington and his generals prosecuted the war with what forces they received while creating ad hoc organizations to meet operational needs. The early stages of the war found Washington and Benedict Arnold using soldiers to perform the functions of sailors and marines out of necessity to check the British on the waterways. Different colonies also created their own navies, equipped with marines, to defend their people and property until the Continental Congress provided these forces. Continued enemy action on the seas compelled Congress to create a navy and marines. Realizing the colonies could never match the Royal Navy ship for ship or man and equip large men of war and ships of the line, American leaders decided to center their fleet on mid-sized frigates. Congress authorized the construction of 13 frigates and established a marine detachment for each ship, but lacked the necessary resources to achieve its goals. Like the Army, the Navy and Marines did not wait for final solutions and began to fight the war with what they had available. They converted merchant ships into combatants and put them to sea to raid British commerce to support the Army with captured weapons, gunpowder, and other supplies, while also denying them to the enemy. Congress soon called on them to do more. Washington's army found itself outgunned and outmaneuvered by British regulars, their Hessian mercenaries, and Loyalist militia in the war's opening months. In 1776, they suffered one defeat after another in the New York campaign. The British pursued the retreating army across New Jersey, forcing Washington south into Pennsylvania. The Delaware River was the only remaining barrier separating the Americans from their onrushing adversaries. Washington's force of nearly 20,000 soldiers had been decimated after months of sustained combat, disease, and desertion, and it was facing the loss of thousands more to terminating enlistments. The very survival of the fledgling country was at risk. The loss of the army meant the loss of the nation. By late 1776, the newly formed United States faced a crisis, and the fledgling Congress lacked the power and authority to address the situation adequately. It did have the Continental Marines, however. Created on November 10, 1775, for service with the fleet, the Marines assisted ships' captains in maintaining good order and discipline with their crews. They fought from the top masts of sailing ships, manned ships' guns, sniped the leadership of opposing forces, and led boarding parties to capture enemy vessels. Marines also formed landing parties to conduct raids, defeat enemy forces, and capture limited objectives as part of larger naval campaigns. Though they never ventured far from their assigned ships to whose captains they answered, the Army's dire situation now required the employment of Marines in a non-traditional role, that of fighting a sustained land campaign. Congress directed the Continental Marines to detach from the Navy to join Washington and the Continental Army in defending the nation. Major Samuel Nicholas, the Continental Marines' senior officer at the time, combined the detachments from frigates under construction in Philadelphia to form a battalion of Marines for service with the Army. They were assigned to a brigade of Philadelphia militia known as the Associators that was first formed by Benjamin Franklin and were joined by several state Marine units. The Continental and state Marines, Washington's Marines, spent the following months crossing rivers, hiking countless miles, and engaging enemy forces beside their army brethren. In the coming days, the Marines participated in three key battles, Trenton, Assunpink Creek, and Princeton, which proved to be a turning point in the war. In Frederick the Great's view, the achievements of Washington and his little band of compatriots between the 25th of December 1776 and the 4th of January 1777, a space of 10 days, were the most brilliant of any recorded in the annals of military achievements. The Marines contributed in other ways. Marines and sailors at sea captured critical supplies necessary to sustain the Army during the trying winter months, and Nicholas's Marines helped avert another manpower crisis in the Army. Following the Battle of Princeton, Washington moved his army to Morristown in the New Jersey Highlands, where he engaged in a forage war. His small force of 4,000 troops effectively held 27,000 British and Hessian soldiers in check. However, terminating enlistments again reached crisis proportions. The American artillery, under the capable leadership of Brigadier General Henry Knox, had more guns than men to work them. Recognizing the Marines' versatility and their experience with the naval guns on ships, Knox requested that they be assigned to the Army Artillery Corps until they were required to return to their ships. Washington granted Knox's request, and the Marines served in this role for several months before departing for the fleet, marking the end of the Marines' first land campaign. The following chapters take the listener on a journey that explores the factors that led to America's fight for independence. They also document the parallel stories of the Continental Army, Navy, and Marines, whose paths intersected when most needed to preserve the nascent nation's struggle for survival and freedom. The Goldwater-Nichols Department of Defense Reorganization Act of 1986 codified the armed forces' approach to joint operations, which the services excel at today. America's first joint operations, however, occurred in 1775 to 1776. This book provides insights into the actions, characters, and challenges of these operations. It is an extraordinary story of virtue, commitment, and sacrifice. The work concludes by describing the evolution of the Marine Corps' roles and missions over the 247 years of its existence. The further removed our citizens become from the trying and uncertain days of the American Revolution, the less they appreciate the sacrifice, dedication, and perseverance required to continue maintaining these freedoms. By sharing this story of America's heroic forefathers, I hope to help close this gap. I hope you enjoy it. God bless, and Semper Fidelis. Jason Q. Bohm. Chapter 1. Enter the Marines. Some people spend an entire lifetime wondering if they made a difference in the world. But the Marines don't have that problem. President Ronald Reagan. Any person acquainted with United States Marines knows that no matter where they may be in the world, during peace or war, Marines dutifully celebrate the birth of their Corps every year. The Marine Corps' official birthday is November 10, 1775. It is thus older than the nation it serves. The Marines jealously guard the history and traditions that earned them a reputation as one of the world's finest fighting organizations. One such tradition is the reading at every Marine Corps birthday celebration of Article 38, Marine Corps Manual, published in 1921 by John A. Lejeune, the 13th Commandant of the Marine Corps. It states in part, "On November 10, 1775, a Corps of Marines was created by a resolution of the Continental Congress. In memory of them, it is fitting that we who are Marines should commemorate the birthday of our Corps by calling to mind the glories of its long and illustrious history." Lejeune's message serves as a reminder of battles won, stating that, "From the Battle of Trenton to the Argonne, Marines have won foremost honors in war, and in the long eras of tranquility at home, generation after generation of Marines have grown gray in war in both hemispheres, and in every corner of the seven seas, that our country and its citizens might enjoy peace and security." Written following the end of World War I, General Lejeune's words are still true today. The United States should be justifiably proud of its Corps of Marines. For 247 years, Marines have demonstrated their willingness to sacrifice all for the greater good. This ethos is manifested in the Marine Corps motto, Semper Fidelis, always faithful to their God, their country, and their Corps. The Marines' strong sense of selfless service to others is forged in a war-fighting culture of shared hardship and an unwavering commitment to always placing one's mission before self. Marines possess a naval character. created to serve with the fleet and organized as part of the Department of the Navy, Marines continue to serve on ships as the nation's expeditionary force in readiness. The 82nd Congress wrote into law that the Marine Corps will always be the most ready when the nation is least ready. This charter drives Marines to be prepared in every clime and place and every war-fighting domain, as articulated in the first verse of the Marines' hymn, "From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, we will fight our country's battles in the air, on land, and sea, first to fight for right and freedom and to keep our honor clean. We are proud to claim the title of United States Marines." Today's Marines operate far beyond the domains of air, land, and sea. Cyberspace and information are new areas Marines must successfully navigate in order to achieve victory on 21st-century battlefields. This concept is often difficult to grasp. Marines have come under attack throughout history by some of our nation's senior leaders, both civilian and military. They questioned the need for a Marine Corps, a special force fighting in all domains, when it has an Army, Navy, and Air Force that excel in these areas. Lieutenant General Victor Krulak attempted to answer that very question in 1957 when General Randolph Pate, the commandant of the Marine Corps at the time, asked, "Why does the U.S. need a Marine Corps?" Krulak asserted that the nation did not need a Marine Corps, it wanted a Marine Corps. This desire hails from the nation's belief that Marines are men and women of honor, succeeding at everything they do. The nation understands that Marines live by higher standards and will always remain semper fidelis. This reputation was not established overnight. It began in November 1775 as 13 independent British colonies struggled to become a free, united, and independent nation. American colonists resisted the actions of an oppressive British government and determined to throw off the shackles of the motherland. Great Britain, however, was not willing to release its subjects. Americans would have to fight for their independence. Conducting a war in the 18th century required an army, navy, and marines, which the colonists lacked as hostilities commenced. The newly formed Continental Congress struggled to keep up with the fast-moving events of the opening years of the Revolution. General George Washington adopted local militias to form the Continental Army, as Congress created the Continental Navy and Marines to fight on the sea. Marines would prove their worth in the opening year of the war, but circumstances quickly required more. Washington's army experienced multiple defeats in 1776. It was forced out of New York and was driven through New Jersey as numbers dwindled due to casualties, capture, sickness, desertions, and the termination of enlistments. December 1776 was a low point for the army and the infant nation. Washington needed help, and Marines answered the call. Although created to fight on the sea and conduct short raids ashore, Marines and sailors demonstrated their versatility in fighting a prolonged land campaign. The Corps' senior officer, Major Samuel Nicholas, organized and led a battalion of Marines under Washington's command in the battles of Trenton and Princeton. It was the first of many land campaigns assigned to Marines in defense of the country throughout its history. This was a new concept to Marines, as they were not trained for prolonged land campaigns or operating onshore beyond the support of naval guns. In the winter of 1776, Marines knew more about running a spar or handling ships' lines than the field craft needed to prosecute a winter campaign like that of Trenton and Princeton. Members of the congressional committee who recommended establishing American Marines, however, believed they would be of the utmost service, being capable of serving either by sea or land. By the time Marines joined Washington's forces, they were well equipped and led by officers who had been bloodied in earlier naval battles and land-based skirmishes. They possessed a high state of training and discipline, learning the importance of instant obedience to orders and understanding that failure could result in death and the loss of their ships. Following their early successes when they joined Washington outside Trenton, confidence and morale rose among the Marines, bringing new energy to the tired and weary Army. The battles of Trenton and Princeton provided one of the first examples of the Marines' ability to adapt to meet the nation's needs. Samuel Nicholas's Marines possessed the skills to fight on land and sea. Trained in the basic disciplines, standards, and tactics of infantrymen, they also brought unique skills required of the naval service. Marines could operate heavy shipboard cannons that could be placed on land carriages and employed ashore. This valuable skill was used at Trenton and Princeton, resulting in some Marines joining the Army's artillery permanently due to a critical shortfall of trained personnel during the 1776 to 1777 winter campaign. Marines also possessed the sharpshooter skills needed to snipe enemy officers while fighting from the high riggings of their ships during sea battles. These skills, and many others, made Marines valuable partners to their brothers in the Army, and the Marines have exhibited them in all American wars and military actions to the present day. Marines came in many forms during the opening stages of the Revolutionary War. The Continental Marines, sanctioned by Congress, were joined by state Marines and privateers performing Marine functions. Some soldiers also received the task of performing the duties of Marines to meet local requirements. These different groups often worked independently, performing well together during the battles of Trenton and Princeton. Regardless, the Marines played an essential role in the defeat of the British and the birth of a new nation. Before delving further into the contribution of America's Marines, one must first understand the origin of Marines and their role in history. Marine is defined as of or relating to the sea. No one can clearly identify the first Marines. Men have been fighting on the sea since the beginning of civilization. In 480 BC, the Greek warrior Themistocles employed epivates, or heavy-armed sea soldiers, to defeat the Persians under Xerxes at Salamis. During the First Punic War, 264 to 241 BC, the Romans effectively employed soldiers for sea combat to defeat the Carthaginians. Roman legionaries exploited their superior ground-fighting skills by employing long planks with spikes, called corvus, to latch onto enemy ships, allowing their soldiers to board and defeat enemy vessels. In 1203, Venice organized the first formal corps of Marines to assist in the defeat of the Byzantine Empire during the Fourth Crusade. 1537 saw the creation of the Spanish Infanteria de Armada, Navy infantry, to serve with its Mediterranean galley squadrons. The modern origin of Marines can be traced to the European powers during the 17th century. The French and Dutch formed naval infantry units by training sailors for ground combat. In 1644, the British were the first to establish a dedicated group of soldiers to serve the Admiralty. The Duke of York and Albany's Maritime Regiment of Foot, also known as the Lord High Admiral's Regiment, served in the Dutch and French wars, disbanding in 1688. Regiments of Royal Marines took part in the War of the Spanish Succession, 1702 to 1713, the War of Jenkins's Ear, 1739 to 1741, in which a regiment of American colonists, including George Washington's brother, Lawrence, served, the War of the Austrian Succession, 1744 to 1748, and the Seven Years' War, also known as the French and Indian War, 1756 to 1763. During the latter conflict, the British Parliament authorized the establishment of a body of Royal Marines that endures today. The early Royal Marines performed a variety of tasks. While at sea, they ensured good order and discipline of ships' crews, enforced ships' regulations concerning thievery, living conditions, and misconduct, and punished offenders. Additionally, they protected officers from possible mutiny. During combat, Marines employed muskets against enemy officers and gun crews, repelled boarders or provided boarding parties to capture enemy ships, and manned their own ships' guns beside their Navy counterparts. Ships' captains employed detachments of Marines as landing parties to conduct raids and other expeditions essential to naval campaigns. The close association between Royal Marines and the American colonists who served within their ranks before the Revolution contributed to the Royal Marines later being used as the model for creating the United States Marines. The United States is a maritime nation. The 13 original colonies relied heavily on
Sample complete. Ready to continue?